From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
It's clear that we are not going to have a budget for fiscal year 2016. Let's just admit it, there's just too much politics going on here. Our schools, the credits are being downgraded. They're not going to be able to borrow money anymore. They're going to go out of business. There's layoffs. There's that loss of accreditation.
Passage of this override and an enactment of the appropriation doesn't suddenly put $721 million into the general revenue fund.
You drop the money off the table and you vote for those students from Chicago that go to Eastern Illinois University because that is their way out of the ghetto. Help those students by voting yes on this bill and help those students to vote yes tomorrow and the next day on higher education funding that will fund the entire institution.
The answer is to stop voting for this stuff. The answer is to stop empowering this leadership that keeps thrusting this upon us, because if we don't give them an out, we can get a solution.
Voices from a contentious debate on the floor of the Illinois House this week, talking about funding for higher education in this case. We'll talk about that and more this week on State Week. I'm Brian Mackey. With me in studio at WUIS is Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield and a longtime State House observer. And in the Illinois Public Radio State House Bureau, Amanda Vinicky, bureau chief for IPR and WUIS, and Dan Petrella, the new or relatively new Springfield bureau chief for Lee Enterprises, which has newspapers in Bloomington, Carbondale, Decatur, the Quad Cities, among other places. Dan, I think this is your first time on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm a longtime listener, so I'm excited to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you aboard. So as we sit down to record on Friday, it's been 247 days since the state of Illinois had a budget. I was looking back. In that time, the nation of Iran has struck a deal with America to limit its nuclear program in exchange for sanctions relief. The U.S. reestablished diplomatic relations with Cuba. But here in Springfield, there is still no peace. So this week, MAP grants became the latest flashpoint in the Capitol. Amanda, can you just walk us through what is a MAP grant? How many people are affected? Lay the groundwork for this discussion.
So there are about 130,000 students that receive these MAP grants, and that stands for Monetary Award Program. And it's basically a tuition waiver. So you can get a couple thousand dollars if you are low income that would go to these students to help them pay to go to college. And the thought is that you have students who may not be able to otherwise get a higher education. And so in the long run, giving this aid is better for the state economy, particularly because they are, of course, only good at Illinois schools. It doesn't matter whether they're private, public, community college, what have you. But if they go to school in Illinois, they'll be more apt to stay here. The issue is that, of course, as with other aspects of higher education, having gone so many months without actually getting funded, so these, you know, grants are promised but not paid for, some universities are saying it's okay, we'll cover you. But others say they don't have the money to do so. So that has led some students to have to pay this aid that they had expected to receive on their own. And that has led to situations where people that can't afford it, you know, maybe not getting their degree, or perhaps the uncertainty heading into next year. Because as we heard in the opening there from Representative Jack Franks, when is this going to get resolved? It doesn't look like anytime soon. What does it mean as students are making their decision about where to go for the next school year, when often, but not always, of course, that's a difficult statement to make, but going to school in Illinois is more expensive than going out of state.
And it's really, you know, for those students who were expecting to receive those grants, very difficult when their schools decide that they can't afford to front the money anymore. I've talked a couple times with a senior accounting major at Illinois Wesleyan University in Bloomington, and she's getting ready to graduate, has a job lined up, but now she's on the hook for this money that she was expecting the state to pay for her. And It's caused a lot of uncertainty. She's scrambling to see if she can find loans to cover the difference. And, you know, so I think it's important to remember that there are real people behind all these numbers that we hear during these discussions.
Yeah, and it's not just that you have more debt. Sometimes you might not be able to get your diploma to graduate. If you can't get that, you know, universities will hold that up. And then maybe you can't sit for your professional licensing board. If you can't get your transcript, you can't go to grad school or something like that. But of course, Charlie, you know, this is part of a broader problem with higher education funding. It's not just the MAP grants. We heard John A. Logan Community College downstate this week laid off more people. One of the state representative, John Bradley, said they're now, the headcount is down now 200 from 800 to 600 employees, I think. Higher education is kind of spinning here in Illinois out of control.
Well, it's a real problem, too, because higher education is one of the things where we have an advantage over other states. There was a report out by Moody Analytics that discussed the strengths and weaknesses of Illinois, and one of the things that's our assets, among our assets, besides probably the best transportation network in the nation in terms of being a hub of rail traffic, is the fact that we have a higher or a better educated workforce than most of our neighboring states. People in Illinois, a greater percentage have attained college degrees or advanced degrees beyond the baccalaureate. And this is a talent pool that makes us attractive, particularly to the kind of developing technological initiatives and the entrepreneur stuff going on in advanced, what would you say, science and medicine and things like that, that we have a workforce that those people are looking for. And it comes out of our schools. And when you make it difficult for the schools to carry on, and there's talk about Chicago State, for example, closing. Eastern Illinois is kind of on the bubble. Western's not far behind. It makes you wonder, this is one of our real strengths, so why aren't we focusing on trying to preserve it? Now, the argument is that, oh, colleges are bloated and university presidents make too much money and faculty only work 12 hours a week because that's all the time they spend in class. You know, that kind of stuff that sells to folks who really don't stop and think about what's involved. And it's an easy bullet point, if you will, for politicians. But we really are undercutting ourselves in a way that's going to be harmful to our long-term economic interests.
And this comes after a decade or more of underfunding higher education here in Illinois.
Well, we used to joke that this started with Rod Blagojevich, and Blagojevich bragged about what a rotten college student he was on the campaign trail. So myself and others were saying what he did to higher ed, it's sort of like the revenge of the C student.
Yeah, and you know, it came up on the House floor this week. I can't remember which representative it was. It was somebody on the Republican side of the aisle mentioned the cost of an engineering degree at University of Illinois and how it's gone up so much over the past decade. I think his figures were something like from $35,000 for 4 years to like $150,000 or something like that. And that, I think, kind of ignored the fact that the reason universities have had to continue increasing tuition year after year is because state support has been dwindling even before this current budget standoff.
Well, yeah. Of course, you do have. I think we need to point out that, first of all, higher education is, as Charlie noted, these long-term consequences, and that is where the frustration that, frankly, legislators often share, but is on the budget impasse for it. This is not just one fight about higher education. You know, I feel like when you say, oh, there's a budget impasse, oftentimes it could seem, oh, they're fighting about how much money to give colleges. It isn't that. That's worthy of pointing out. It's not just higher education. It's also the social services network. But getting back to actual higher ed, and part of this, there has been, the legislature has come to the rescue of other areas. When the municipalities were saying, we need money for road salt ahead of the winter, something was done about it. And really, it is telling, and you heard some of that during the debate, why is it that higher education has been left out? And it is a difficult question. It could, because there are a lot of Republican districts. Now we have, of course, a Republican governor that have universities in them. And so this has been particularly politically tricky and dicey, and why you see so many efforts on both sides, both for political reasons and also presumably because many of these legislators really do want this taken care of and cared for, that are trying to get money to colleges, community colleges, as well as public universities. But Bruce Rauner says, and it's clear he really believes, on one hand, he says, you know, I hate this. It's horrible. I don't want it to happen. And yet he's very much demanding that universities come forward with something. He believes that they are too administrative heavy, that CSU isn't doing a good enough job. Both sides in that regard have numbers in terms of how well they're doing at actually educating students. But that appears to be one of the biggest answers for why it is that higher education has been singled out.
So, I would point out too, Amanda, for example, with the funds that were released for road salt, that's money that couldn't be used for anything else because it was the local government's money in the first place.
Right.
It's their share of the motor fuel tax. On the other hand, the dollars that we're talking about for higher education would come from the state's general checkbook account, where all the pressure is. So I think that's a difference. And unfortunately, from my perspective, somebody who believes in higher education, the courts have not stepped in, as they have in so many other areas, to tell the state, you have to fund these institutions.
And there's also a lot of frustration among lawmakers on the Republican side of the aisle in both chambers who have introduced several different packages of legislation that would get money to universities, albeit at lower levels than they received in the last approved budget. And they feel like they can't get their legislation into committees. They can't get it onto the floor for a vote. So you have people like Senator Dale Ryder of Mattoon, who represents Eastern Illinois, and Representative Dan Brady of Bloomington, who represents ISU, out there saying that they're making an effort to find a way to get this funding to universities and pay for it, and it's being blocked by the Democratic leadership in the legislature.
So, Dan, why are the Democrats blocking this up if these are such good ideas? Is this another example of, you know, Republicans, and as we've seen the governor do, oh, sure, I'll be happy to pass a budget, vote for these other side things, what the Democrats call side issues, non-budgetary issues first. The governor says they, you know, believes they're related. I mean, is that what's happening here? Or are Republicans attaching poison pills to their versions of the college funding? Or?
Well, that argument can definitely be made for one of the proposals which is out there, which is to, I think it's about $1.6 billion for universities, MAP grants, and community colleges. But it would be tied to this measure that would give the governor lots of discretion to move money around in the budget to cover shortfalls in other areas, and that's obviously not something the Democrats are interested in doing. And another objection that came up this week is that 20% cut that universities would get under these Republican plans, the Democrats don't feel that that's sustainable for the universities.
You know, something that I do think that we should watch, and it's been, I think it's risen from rumor and gotten to the point where sources do indicate that university presidents who have come together, I know I covered within the past year or so, they all met and with the governor, every university president, they've written various letters where each of the university presidents have been signatories to in this, that they've been talking and maybe coming forward with their own proposal to say, okay, you know, we know that this is an issue. We need money. We know that the governor wants to cut us. We can perhaps accept some sort of reduction, and this is what we will do in return. We haven't seen any language for that yet. And as I said, I mean, I think it's risen from rumor, but maybe not quite soup or anything that is ready for a vote, but something that we should keep an eye on, because that has often been a question. Okay, at this time, what exactly are universities doing about it? And we've really seen Chicago State University be most vocal and forthright, or perhaps giving the just at least loudest in its warning signs about what is to come. Some of the other universities, it seems, have been more hesitant. And we've talked to previously, I think, about why that is, about the issues with recruiting students when you're saying, hey, we might close. They're at this strange negotiating point where they need money and want to say how much they are suffering without it, and nonetheless trying to appear strong and keep good relationships with all of these politicians who sort of, you know, demand that. That don't want to be called out and thrown under the coals and then go forward and be the ones who vote to appropriate millions of dollars to schools.
Well, on this same subject, one of the more unusual things I think that happened this week was, I believe it was on Monday, in a press conference in Chicago, the governor called out the presidents of the universities around the state and said that they were basically under the thumb of House Speaker Michael Madigan, that he has spies in their organizations who report back to him, and that, you know, he encouraged them to stand there with him, and that they were told that, you know, Madigan doesn't want that to happen, so don't do it, or you'll get cut out of any final budget solution, things like that. And I just don't know how that's a productive contribution to trying to figure out this problem.
And maybe the governor actually believes it. You don't know. He also made some comment about Senator Cullerton confided in him that he's been in Madigan's shadow for so long. And I'm thinking to myself, no way John Cullerton would say that.
It's so funny because I had the I thought there's John Cullerton would absolutely say that, but everybody would know it was tongue-in-cheek.
Well, that's true because Cullerton has the greatest sense of humor of anybody in the State House. So he maybe said it as a joke.
Truly, he is hilarious.
And he's very dry. He's very dry. He doesn't. He's got a very.
He maybe mistook it. But even so, if this is some private conversation, you don't go out blabbing it out to the press corps and then expect to be able to sit down and work out deals with these people.
Well, particularly the governor who has in the past blown up when the Senate Democrats, of all people, you know, even mentioned to the press that they were meeting with the governor later that day.
You're right, Brian.
Or maybe this was one of those deals like election night. He said, oh, yeah, I talked to the leadership. And it turns out, well, some of my staff made calls and talked to some of their staff.
Amanda?
It really is. I think there's you guys have touched on each of these things. First of all, it is either in this situation that the governor is lying or stretching the truth, or that he is telling about a private conversation. And what does that say about deals? It's one or the other, especially as, two, as you noted, Brian, the administration is so very secretive. They don't even like to say when the leaders are meeting. And further, the governor has often said, you know, I'm not going to talk about it. That's a private meeting. I don't want to talk about that in public. So there's that. I just think the issues continue to arise with what is going on there. And thirdly, of course, yes, how are you going to have a negotiation with somebody? We've already seen that Madigan, for example, doesn't take kindly to that whatsoever. And that is part of this standoff. And I think that the other element of it is that, as Charlie noted, there have been these instances that pop up time and time again where there is question in what really went on from what the governor tells people, either in that call from the election night, be it how he tells how negotiations with AFSCME have gone. It seems as if he could be losing credibility by perhaps stretching the truth here. And at what point is that going to come back and really haunt him in this business where trust is really everything?
This is State Week. Our panel, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, and Dan Petrella of Lee Enterprises. I'm Brian Mackey. So, Amanda, you just said trust is everything. And one wonders, is this, you know, lack of trust that certainly we have seen in the State House, is that having an effect on popularity in the rest of Illinois? Are the citizens finally beginning to pay attention to the budget crisis? And we had the Southern Illinois University Paul Simon Public Policy Institute put out the Simon poll results. They polled on the governor's popularity. Any big surprises there?
Well, you know, the poll when it was done last year, I think the governor was about a split, a third approved, a third disapproved, and another third didn't know because it was, you know, the very beginning of his term. And this time his disapproval rating is 50%. Interestingly, his approval rating also went up a little bit to about 41%, I think. But, you know, I think as much as the governor has tried to pin a lot of the blame for what's going on House Speaker Michael Madigan, people know who the governor is. And when they see things in the state going in a direction that they're not happy with, they blame the guy at the top.
Yeah, and it was interesting. There were regional differences. The governor's worst ratings were in Chicago. He only had 34% approval there. Downstate, it was about 10 points higher, 43% approved of him downstate. And yet, this is what I thought was an interesting kind of juxtaposition. You had 51% of the people responding to this poll said their quality of life in their local area here in Illinois was excellent or good. Another 32% said average. So that is the overwhelming majority of people. Some quick math. I think that's 83% say their quality of life here in Illinois is average, good, or excellent. 83%. At the same time, 84% say the state is on the wrong track. And so, Charlie, is this sort of a Rorschach test? What is a politician to make of this? Does the governor find ammunition to use here? Do the Democrats find ammunition to use here?
Well, I think what the governor's people will do is discount the poll and say that it doesn't mean anything because it shows his popularity slipping and his, his unpopularity increasing. And one of the subsets that I found interesting was that he had in the suburbs, he had 43% approve, 47% disapprove. Now, the margin of error is roughly 3 points. So if you add 3 points to approval, take 3 points away from disapproval, it's sort of tied. But overall, even within the margin of errors, if you err on the side of positive in terms of his disapproval and err on the side of negative and subtracting points the other way, he still comes out with the plurality of the respondents in the poll, most of the people who expressed an opinion saying they disapprove of his job performance as governor. Now, it should be pointed out, this particular poll, or at least what's been released so far, didn't ask, what about the performance of the General Assembly? Or what about the performance of, you know, the Darth Vader of Illinois politics, Michael Madigan? And it didn't ask about, what do you think about your local legislator? And my guess is that the General Assembly as an institution, Madigan in particular, would not fare much better than Rauner did. Whereas your local legislator would probably fare as well as people said, I like my community and I'm happy where I am. Everybody else is up a creek.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting that how many fewer people, I think Dan, you pointed this out, how many fewer people went from no opinion to having an opinion of the governor this year, and you wonder if the speaker's name recognition is been equally boosted, and yet only a third of the people responding to this poll said they have been, less than a third, have been affected by the state budget impasse.
Dan,
another big question about this going forward is what it's going to mean in November when, Republicans face off against Democrats on the ballot. And, if everybody's blaming the Republican governor, is that going to have consequences for legislators that have that R next to their name on the ballot? Or, are people happy with their local representation and it's not really going to get held against them?
And speaking of November, this thought occurred to me, perhaps an even bigger problem for Republicans will be who is at the top of their ticket. I'm thinking that despite Donald Trump's popularity within one segment of the Republican Party, I don't see him with that much of an appeal cutting across the aisle, in other words, to independents or to Democrats. And it's quite possible that there are some Republicans, and you look at the reaction from the Republicans on the national level, it's like they're terrified of having Donald Trump at the top of the ticket because what it will mean for offices on down the ticket from U.S. Senate on down to, local legislators or county officials.
Yeah, I had an experience with Congressman Rodney Davis, who's from Central Illinois, here last year at the Illinois State Fair, where I can't remember exactly which Trump pronouncement was in the news at the time. It might be taking away birthright citizenship, changing the Constitution. Another reporter and I had to ask Congressman Davis like 3 or 4 times, do you favor changing the Constitution? He didn't want to offend that segment of voters that are, very enthusiastic about Trump. But on the other hand, he ultimately said, no, of course, I do not favor taking away birthright citizenship. So, yeah, a lot of danger for Republicans. Briefly, as we're coming up on our time here, COGFA, which is the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, had a revenue estimate this week. They talked a little bit about what direction the Illinois economy might be heading in. Dan, I think I saw you in that hearing with me this week. Any big takeaways from that?
Well, one of the most interesting things that jumped out at me was that COGFA said that the estimates that were included in the governor's budget proposal were relying on almost $1 billion. It was like $925 million of revenue sources that were either uncertain or indefinite. So, you know, the governor's budget office, their response to that was that, well, you know, we estimated those conservatively anyway, so it'll all be okay. But that might make the math of putting together a budget for next year even more difficult.
Yeah, I think that counts for a sick burn in terms of Illinois budget forecasters. Charlie, did you have any reaction to that?
I would say that under a law that was enacted roughly 5 years ago, governors are supposed to present budgets based on exactly what the status quo is at the time. They're not supposed to count money that they don't have, like $200 million from selling the Thompson Center. They're not supposed to reduce their expenses by cuts they hope to make in health insurance costs for state workers. It's supposed to be based on exactly what is in place now. And the governor's budget didn't come anywhere near that. And I'd also say, historically, under both Republican and Democratic governors, the numbers from COGFA, the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, and its predecessor, the Economic and Fiscal Commission, have always been more on the mark than the numbers that come from the budget office. The reason is the budget office is an arm of the governor and manages to massage the numbers so they reflect what the governor wants. COGFA, on the other hand, is made up of equal numbers of Democrats and Republicans, of House members and Senate members, so their numbers are real. There's no massaging. There's no trying to advance an agenda. They call it like it is, and over the years, and I go back watching this stuff more years than I want to remember, I go back to the days of Richard Ogilvie, the numbers from COGFA have always been solid.
Well, and my own take on that is I thought it was interesting the chief economist for Illinois, Ed Boss, pointed out that sales, consumer spending has really been down. The Christmas season sales were off, and Illinois has taken in, I think it was about $200 million less in sales taxes than it might have expected to, and that could be signaling some danger signs ahead in the Illinois economy. So time now for notes from the field. We've only got about 15 seconds each. Amanda Vinicky.
Got two real quick here. First, the Illinois Historic Preservation Agency does have a new director chosen this week. Also, we did not talk about this on the program, but the Senate has sent to the governor a bill identical to one he previously vetoed that would allow for an independent arbitrator to decide when there is a conflict as unions and the state have issues with contracts.
Dan Petrella.
And an interesting note on that vote is that actually it picked up one Republican in favor this time. Last time, Senator Sam McCann of Plainview voted with the Democrats on that, and he's suffered a lot of political consequences for that in his primary race. This time, Senator Neil Anderson of Rock Island, also a Republican, voted in favor. He's not up for re-election for another 2 years, so he might be safe for a while, but it'll be interesting to watch how the Rauner administration and other Republicans react to him siding with the Democrats on that.
Charlie Wheeler.
And the Illinois House voted overwhelmingly in a rare show of bipartisanship to make the school board in the city of Chicago elected, like school boards in every other school district and localities around the state, instead of having them appointed by the mayor. That was a change that was put in place in 1995. And since the days of Mayor Richard M. Daley and now Mayor Rahm Emanuel, the mayor has handpicked people to be on the school board.
That is our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Dan Petrella of Lee Enterprises. You can get a podcast of this show at WUIS.org. Production assistance for today's program was provided by Bob Meyer. For Charlie Wheeler and Amanda Vinicky, I'm Brian Mackey.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.